This is Back to You Box Office, episode number 287 for the weekend of March 24th through March 26th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office, a little show where we talk about movies, TV, lately some games, and some other stuff. So let me introduce you to the voice you just heard, other than mine. Art, how are things going?
Things are going well. Could not be happier. Can't wait to really dig in tonight. Let's go check those box office results.
Okay, thanks for stealing my intro. So now here are the box office results from boxofficemojo.com for the weekend of March 17th through March 19th. At number one, to no one's surprise, we have Beauty and the Beast for $174.8 million. At number two, we have Kong : Skull Island, which that was a new movie last week, so the second week release is what I'm trying to say, $27.8 million. At number three, we have, in its third week of release, Logan at $17.8 million. We have at number four, Get Out, in its fourth week of release, $13.4 million. And at number five, The Shack at $6 million even in its third week of release. And there's your top five.
Yeah, no big surprises there. We had a very full weekend in a lot of ways. We did not get out to the movies.
Spoiler alert for Showtime, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, we didn't see Beauty and the Beast. Oh, I saw plenty of stuff. I got lots to share in Showtime, but I did not see Beauty and the Beast. well, I didn't see this Beauty and the Beast, and I'll leave it at that.
Oh, no. Okay. God, I'd fast forward if I could. Okay. You know what was interesting is when I was looking at news and they were talking about that, I guess that this live-action Beauty and the Beast has already surpassed the gross of the animated one. So I was going to try and find out how much the animated Beauty and the Beast did. And then I came across this little list that Box Office Mojo did, and it's called Cinderella Complex. So these are all movies that either directly or indirectly involve Cinderella. So okay. At number one, My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Nice.
$241 million. And this is lifetime gross.
Right.
Even though it made $597,000. In its opening release of 108 theaters. And that was back in April of 2002. So I'm going to just run through these real quick. Two, Beauty and the Beast, we just talked about. Three, Cinderella, $201 million. Four, Pretty Woman, $178 million. Devil Wears Prada, $124.7 million. The Princess Diaries, $108 million. Miss Congeniality, $106 million. Diaries 2, the Royal Engagement, $95 million, Made in Manhattan, and then Ever After, Cinderella Story at $65.7 million is number 10. She's All That, 13 Going on 30, Sabrina, A Cinderella Story, Miss Congeniality 2, Armed and Dangerous, the Lizzie McGuire Movie, The Prince and Me, Ice Princess, Ellen Enchanted, and 20, Dirty Love. I don't know about that one.
I was going to say, up until that point, I've seen all of those movies. I have not seen Dirty Love. I have no idea what that is. It sounds inappropriate.
Yeah, the genres, according to Box Office Mojo, Cinderella Complex, dark comedy, romantic comedy. And it looks like Jenny McCarthy and Carmen Electra.
Nope.
Two people I can see.
Never heard of it, but I saw every other movie on that list.
And that was September 23rd, 2005. All right, so that is going to end the box office results for the last weekend. So, Beauty and the Beast is probably going to be around a while. So now let's move over to three new movies that are coming out this weekend. And so, Art, why don't you tell us about the first one?
All right. The first one on the list, Sabin's Power Rangers. It is 45% Rotten on Tomato Meter, 67 reviews counted, 30 fresh, 37 rotten. 94% want to see it out of 28,200 users. So Lodon is a group of high school kids who are infused with unique superpowers, harness their abilities in order to save the world. Rated PG-13 for sequences of sci-fi violence, action and destruction, language, and for some crude humor. Genre is action-adventure, drama, science fiction, fantasy. Directed by Dean Israelite. Written by John Gattens, Matt Sazama, Burke Sharpless, Michelle Mulrooney?
Yeah.
Kieran Mulrooney. Oh, okay. Husband-wife team, maybe? Brother-sister? Who knows? Runtime, 124 minutes. We have Dockery Montgomery, Naomi Scott, RJ Seiler, Bill Hader, Becky G, Ludie Lin, Elizabeth Banks, Bryan Cranston. Oh, Zordon. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Oh my God. All right. So yeah, I don't know what to think about this one.
I'm vaguely interested. I watched the original Power Rangers. I'm seriously thinking about just buying tickets to take Mark, because he's a huge Power Rangers fan, but he's very upset at this reimagining. So we'll see how that goes. I gotta text our respective wives and see if there's a good time to just buy tickets and say, come on, let's go.
All right, so I'm looking at the reviews and figuring out which ones I want to mention.
Okay.
Jim Slotek from the Toronto Sun, who happens to be a top critic. This is a fresh review. Be warned, the movie is three quarters over before you see any Zords, Megazords, or monsters. On the other hand, I rather liked what the filmmakers gave us instead. Power Rangers is almost literally the Breakfast Club of the superpowers.
Nice.
3 out of 5 stars. All right, so we have one that liked Elizabeth Banks' performance. Ultimately, this is a kids' property superhero movie about teens getting power from ancient aliens and battling someone named Rita Repulsa, Elizabeth Banks taking large bites of the scenery. The filmmakers do not forget to have fun with it. So that's 3 out of 4 stars. And then we have Katie Walsh from the Tribune News Service. If the Rangers are on the CW, Banks is in a universe of her own, talking about the small town of Angel Grove in hobo dominatrix gear, dramatically stage whispering gold crystals and Krispy Kreme to no one in particular.
All right. Well.
And I've got to include the worst review pun. Bring Advil or something stronger. It's morphine time. Justin Chang from the LA Times.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I guess he thought it was a little painful.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so, but, you know, I can do without the product placement reviews. Yeah, this will be a wait for Netflix
free,
or
Red free on television. Yeah,
something like that.
Wait till it's not going to cost me anything.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, so that's movie number one. Let me tell you about movie number two, and this is not about a board game. Okay, this one is called Life. It is currently 64%, so it is barely fresh. Average rating is 5.9. Reviews counted 76, 49 fresh, 27 rotten. 98% want to see it out of almost 17,000 Rotten Tomatoes users. So here's the description. Life tells the story of the 6-member crew of the International Space Station that is on the cutting edge of one of the most important discoveries in human history, the first evidence of extraterrestrial life on Mars. As the crew begins to conduct research, their methods end up having unintended consequences, and the life form proves more intelligent than anyone ever expected. This is rated R for language throughout, some sci-fi violence and terror. The genre is action and adventure, drama, science fiction, and fantasy. Written by Paul Wernick and Rhett Reese. Directed by Daniel Espinosa. And this is going to cost you 103 minutes. Starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Rebecca Ferguson, Ryan Reynolds. Oh my God, there's a lot of L's. Olga Dihovichnaya.
Sure.
And then we have Hiroyuki Sanada. And then Arion Bokhari as Hugh Derry. So, yeah, not a lot of hyper commercials for this one, at least from what I've seen. I mean, especially for a movie that has Gyllenhaal and Reynolds.
Yeah. I'm interested. It's in that genre of kind of space, aliens, horror, borderline.
I mean, it's got whiffs of hard sci-fi, but probably not. But
right. Yeah. It makes me think of the Aliens franchise and Prometheus and things of that ilk. So right. We'll see. I don't think I'll be seeing this in the theater.
I'm just going to read the first half of the little blurb on Rotten Tomatoes from Daniel M. Kimmel from New England Movies Weekly. It's not terrible. 2 out of 5 stars. Oh, my gosh. All right. So, Art, why don't you tell us about the third of 3 movies coming out this weekend?
All right. Last on our list, Chips. It is 34% rotten. 32 reviews counted, 11 fresh, 21 rotten. 88% want to see it out of a paltry 5,600 users. The big screen adaptation of the famous TV series from the 70s and 80s stars Dax Shepard and Michael Pena as a pair of California Highway Patrol officers. Ryan Hansen, Jessica McNamee, Kristen Bell, Vincent D'Onofrio, Maya Randolph, and Adam Brody co-star. Shepard also wrote and directed. Well, that's what you call a description. Rated R for crude sexual content, graphic nudity, pervasive language, some violence, and drug use. Genre is action, adventure, comedy, drama. Written and directed by Dax Shepard. Runtime 1 hour and 1 minute. And I basically named everybody in the description.
Wow. So, do you have fond memories of the Chips TV show?
I was not a big fan. Yeah. It was one of those things where it was better than nothing when you had all of 4 channels.
I mean, it might have been bigger out here because it is California.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, there's a lot of vitriol in these.
I'm sure. 34% rotten, I mean.
I am going to start with a fresh review from Mr. Leonard Bolton. Unlike some contrived or cynical rehashes of old TV series, this one has no pretensions. It's escapism with a capital E, a funny, energetic, enjoyably ragged buddy movie with lots of car chase action. Okay, we'll do two more rotten ones. A Jamie East from The Sun, UK, a buddy people for a movie that have no friends, a buddy movie for people that have no friends and don't like laughing. And then Elliot Noble from Sky Movies says, step away from the vehicle. 1 out of 5 stars. So, yeah. I don't know. I like Dax Shepard. So maybe, you know. But yeah, I'll see Power Rangers probably for this one. To put it that way.
I feel like it has the potential to go kind of down the road that 21 Jump Street did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people didn't have big expectations on that one. I wish there was a way to roll back what the tomato meter score was opening weekend for 21 Jump Street. You know, after the fact, I know a lot of people jumped on board, but at the time, it'd be interesting to see. Because I know a lot of people were not excited going into that one. Then after it actually hit, people were like, wow, that's actually a really good movie. So.
Yeah. That's interesting. An interesting thought there.
But, you know, after this weekend, I think we'll have a better picture with a lot of people are actually out there getting out there and seeing it.
Yeah, because 21 Jump Street ended up being 85%.
Right. But I'm sure it did not start there.
Interesting. All right. So that's going to conclude our look at the 3 new movies coming out this weekend. And so now we're going to move on over to Share Time, is where Art and myself will talk about what we've been up to for the last week as far as movies, TV, games, or whatever else we feel like sharing. And this is the time where we usually share any voicemails. And we happen to get a voicemail from Mr. Tad. So we're going to listen to that in just a moment. But he does have a special guest star that he refers to at the end. So, Tad, why don't you tell us what you've been doing?
Hey, Backseat Box Office. This is Tad calling in with what I've been watching. I got quite a bit here, so I'm going to try to make it quick so I can get it all in one voicemail. First, I saw Beauty and the Beast. If you might remember, I'm not really into musicals, but actually, it was pretty good. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I had a good time. There were some pretty funny parts. So I liked that. Also on Netflix, I watched Saint Vincent. It was pretty good. It's an hour and a half, so it's not too long. Bill Murray, I mean, you know, that's kind of the main reason I watched it was because of Bill Murray, and it's kind of hard to go wrong with Bill Murray. But I would recommend that. I liked it pretty well. And then, of course, I watched the Netflix Iron Fist. I got the whole season in about a week. I liked it. I know they released the first, four seasons or so early to critics, and there were some kind of not so good reviews. I guess maybe it did start out kind of slow. But I kind of remember, the first season of Daredevil being the same way, starting out kind of slow. So that I didn't really mind it. I kind of liked it. They showed the motivations of the character. I mean, you knew the characters were bad guys, but they showed the motivations that you could kind of empathize with them, and you could tell, you know, understand why they were doing what they were doing, and maybe they weren't really, you know, they weren't evil, but you know, they were the bad guys. So I really liked that part of it. And you know, there was some pretty decent character development going on in there. So yeah, I liked that pretty well. Now the one thing it did remind me of was I don't know, you guys might remember. Some of the younger people might not, but there was a 1985 movie called The Last Dragon, where there was a, you know, the Shogun of Harlem and Bruce Leroy, and they had the glow, where, like, you know, their fists or their whole body could glow if they achieved the final level of martial arts. And I remember, you know, Bruce Leroy and the Shogun of Harlem. I guess the Shogun of Harlem's name is Shonuff. But yeah, it was a pretty okay. 15-year-old Tad loved the movie. I would recommend watching it. It says it's a cult classic. Rotten Tomatoes has it at 33%, but, 15-year-old Tad really liked it. So, I'm not sure it will hold up though. So, all right, guys, thanks for the show. That's what I've been watching. Hopefully I got this early enough for the next show. All right. Bye bye.
All right. Thank you, Tad. And thank you for also talking about 15-year-old Tad. Yeah. Did you ever see that, The Last Dragon?
I own The Last Dragon.
Oh, you do?
I've probably watched that within the last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So. Oh, wow. All right. So, all right. Now it's your turn, Art. What have you been up to?
Okay. So, I am... So we talked about Beauty and the Beast, and I talked about picking up that video of a French rendition of Beauty and the Beast, and it was not in French. It is dubbed. It is dubbed at a 1970s Godzilla level of dubbing.
Oh boy! Oh boy! Okay.
It is practically unwatchable.
To most people. not to you.
I did not finish it.
I'm shocked.
I would have. Aubrey did not want to finish it. She put the veto foot down. But what's funny is you talked about the Cinderella complex, and the movie starts out with Belle having a much bigger family. She has two brothers. She has two sisters. The two sisters are horrible. They are straight out of the Cinderella handbook. And she's like, Dad, this is Cinderella. I'm like, no, it's Beauty and the Beast. She's like, Dad, this is Cinderella. I'm like, no, I swear it's Beauty and the Beast. And we're probably about, I don't know, half an hour, 40 minutes in before the Beast makes his appearance. She's like, okay, Dad, it's Beauty and the Beast. She's like, but I don't want to watch it. So I didn't actually finish it. I will go back and finish it at some point.
To, Art. Come on.
I want to see how it ends. I want to see where it goes. I just can't watch it with Ari because she doesn't want to watch it. It's that bad. Oh, my goodness. The dubbing. Oh, the dubbing is so bad. So I put the Flash on hold. Do you want to guess why I put the Flash on hold?
I don't know.
Iron Fist.
Yeah, okay.
I watched Iron Fist in its entirety. I really enjoyed it. I don't know what the critics are talking about. I thought it was very well done. I enjoyed the fight scenes. I did not think they were lackluster. I thought the characters came across well. Everybody's motivations. I don't want to say too much, but the numerous villains, all with good motivations and things, the way things move around. I thought it was really good. I'd probably put it. See, I've liked all of these. Everything in the Defender series. I don't know where I would. I haven't. It's been long enough that I haven't watched, you know, Daredevil, Luke Cage, and Jessica Jones. It might still be. It's not the strongest. It might be the least strong of the four. I would probably still rewatch this before Jessica Jones, just because it's more in my wheelhouse. That comes back to, if you're more into, you know, psychological drama and thriller, then that's going to be more your bag. But if you're more into action adventure, then you're gonna go the other way. I really enjoyed it. I thought all the characters were solid, all the actors, you know, and their portrayals. I thought it was really good. Have you watched any of it yet?
I am on episode 12 right now.
Oh, okay.
I got two more to go, and I was gonna talk about Iron Fist when it got to my share time.
Okay, no, I when I said, have you watched any of it yet? You could have just said yes.
Yeah. Well, I want to give you more information than normal. So go ahead.
I have to say how much. I'm just gonna leave it at that. I did not watch anything else. We ended up going out of town this weekend, just me and Brittany. Aubrey stayed home. We drove down to Austin and San Antonio. We went and did some caving at the Natural Bridge Caverns. We hit up one of the restaurants on the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives list. The Guy Fieri show. Yes. We were like, we're on a road trip. Let's find a place that's on that list and go check it out. So we enjoyed that. We went to a little place called the Magnolia Cafe in Austin. We went to the Space Needle, and we did the San Antonio River Walk. And so I have, you often see these places where they serve some ginormous piece of food that if you eat it in its entirety, it is free.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen one of these places before. You know, I go out to eat a lot of places. I've been a lot of places. I've never actually been in one. We saw a place, and they had a giant burrito, a $32 burrito, that if you eat the entire burrito, it is free. Brittany was trying to talk me into eating this burrito. And I was like, no, that's something I have to prepare for ahead of time. The food was fantastic. It is called Rio Rio, and they dubbed themselves as the original Mexican restaurant. I don't know if they're the original Mexican restaurant anywhere, the original Mexican restaurant on the Riverwalk in San Antonio. I don't know. I think they were established. I think the sign said something like maybe, in 80.
I was just going to say, maybe they're the original Mexicans.
The original Mexicans.
It's like the original Mexicans restaurant.
apparently the restaurant was founded in like 1899.
Okay.
So, but the food was fantastic. We ate right there on the Riverwalk. Really enjoyed ourselves. We had a nice time away. So I didn't actually get a lot of movie watching done, but still had a lot of fun. Brittany will never go into a cave again.
And why is that?
She just did. It took too long. It was a little claustrophobic. It was, you know. So she enjoyed doing it. She doesn't want to do it again. I'm like, okay. She's like, next time we go, I'll take Aubrey and you can stay above ground. But it was a pretty neat cavern. It went, like 180 feet underground. It was like, almost a mile in length. The things we saw were fascinating. There was the largest underground cavern in Texas. It's like 100 feet long. I think 75 feet wide, 75 feet tall. It was ginormous. It was really cool. So anyway, those are all the things we did. It was a nice, fun weekend. And like I said, I got through all of Iron Fist, so I am happy. You, sir, why don't you tell me about your share time?
All right. So I pretty much deferred everything else because I think I'm 4 episodes in on Killjoys, and I'm still enjoying that. But, yeah, I got through the first 11 episodes, and I'll tell you a funny story, you know, because in this day and age, whenever you're going to talk about something on Netflix, you gotta ask how far, I mean, have you watched the entire thing?
Right.
Or, you know, what episode are you on?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And so I asked my buddy, you know, how far are you? Oh, I've watched 6 episodes. Oh, so have I. And he was like, oh, so what'd you think of spoiler plot detail?
Right.
Right. And he said, and I said, I don't remember seeing that. Well, that was in episode 6. When I watched it that night, it was in episode 7. So thanks a lot, a-hole, for that. It didn't really, you know, in the scheme of things, it wasn't that big a spoiler, but yeah, no. I do have to admit that I was colored a little bit by some of the negative reviews because there's definitely things that I did that I enjoyed less than the previous 3 or 4 seasons of Marvel Netflix. I don't know if Finn Jones is the right casting for Danny Rand.
Okay.
And I think for me, the structure of the plot is too much like Daredevil, and it's kind of like his story is too similar to Batman for me.
Okay.
I think some of the best movies are movies that are carried by its supporting characters. And I think all of the people involved with the Rand Corporation, to me, made the show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Usually I end up falling in love with some actress in this movie, in this series. You know, in Daredevil, it was Karen Page. But Joy was my favorite in this one, even though, you know, everyone's going gaga over Colleen Wing. And I was shocked to find out that the actress that played Colleen Wing was in Star Wars Episode 7. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
She played I hate to say the, but, you know, she played the female X-Wing pilot towards the end of the movie.
Okay.
Yeah, so apparently that was her. But, you know, I'm still enjoying it, but, you know, it's definitely the I don't want to say the worst, but I'm enjoying this one the least. It's just the execution wasn't there as it was in Daredevil.
Okay.
I
definitely think it's not the best of the bunch. It's the weakest of the bunch, but it doesn't make it bad. You know, it's like it's when you're dealing with the things that are as stellar as Daredevil and Jessica Jones, and, you know, you're coming in 4th place, but the other 3 people are, you know, did it so well. It doesn't make you bad. It just makes you not as good.
Well, let me ask you this. Now that I haven't watched the last 2, but considering that you've seen all 4.
Right.
What's the best fight scene in all 4 of the Marvel Netflixes?
Oh.
Okay, so I'm gonna give you a minute to think, because this was kind of right after the, you know, when you said that spoiler, we were talking about, to me, the best fight scene is still Murdoch versus Nobu in season 1 of Daredevil.
That was a good one.
And just because they didn't show it beginning to end.
Right.
Kind of thing. Because I thought for sure Nobu was going to kill Murdoch. And it to me, is just the most attractive fight. And my buddy, you know, almost wants to fight me over the fact that I didn't say the prison fight scene in season 2 of Daredevil with the Punisher, when the Punisher gets out of prison. And, you know, because he said it's almost panel for panel out of the comic books. And I said that really wasn't. That's not a consideration for me at all.
That doesn't matter for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, if I didn't read the comics, what, you know, what good is that for me? And they need to entertain me based on just what, you know, what's going on there. They don't need to tie in the comics knowledge. But you know, be that as it may. One thing that I did like is they didn't like crank it up to 11 on the Easter eggs kind of thing. They just made light mentions that this is the same geographical area.
Right.
So there are mentions of, you know, obviously what will soon to become the Defenders. They made a very reserved mention that maybe Joy availed herself of the services of Jessica Jones.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the thing is, I do like Iron Fist, even though this is really my first exposure to Iron Fist in any media per se.
Okay.
So I might have to go pick up one or two graphic novels.
He was on the Spider-Man cartoon, along with, it's the one where he's dealing with S.H.I.E.L.D. and
Ultimate Spider-Man.
I think it's Ultimate. Yeah.
And you know, we've been talking, you know, pre-show about the, Eric Lang's next big game is Rising Sun, and, you know, all of the dialogue between Rand and Colleen, where, you know, she follows the, you know, the Bushido code.
Right.
Kind of thing. But I do, you know, all this, the Eastern philosophy always makes, you know, I don't know what I'm saying here. Some of the, like, kindness is the eternal law. Those kind of quotes. I always, right. Enjoy the, you know, the kung fu stuff kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I'm not going to sit here and say, don't watch it, or, I'm just shocked that there's a couple of, media outlets that talking that, you know, this is a disaster.
I don't see it that way at all.
I don't know. You know, there's a couple parts in this show where it gets like super, I don't want to say ridiculous, but kind of like super gory maybe.
Yeah. You know, that was another thing before I saw it, and I was talking about how we were talking about how the reviews were coming back. And I was saying, well, maybe, you know, people are expecting it to be more dark like the first three. And it was really dark.
Well, I think there might have been a direction or two that, you know, because Jessica Jones kind of paved that road, especially towards the end of Jessica Jones.
Right.
But yeah, I'm enjoying it. You know, I've pretty much been watching, you know, I watch four episodes Sunday night, and I've been watching two episodes after work every night. I don't do that very often. So, there are a couple things that didn't make sense to me, and I don't really want to talk about them now, but, so maybe we'll talk some more after I've ended up, you know, finishing it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But there was something that Netflix did that I was almost had to stand up and applaud kind of thing, but I'm going to talk about it in the news.
Okay.
All right. So it was basically Iron Fist had another great game night last Friday. We had one more person than I thought we were going to have. We ended up playing we ended up playing Fuji Flush in the beginning and Fuji Flush at the end. And I think I got two more converts that I'll be inviting to the next church service for Fuji Flush. It's just everyone I played with loves it, so I'm very excited about that. Finally got ticket to ride to the table with three people that have never played it before.
Nice.
So that was good. And then we were going to try to do a zombie game. We're going to try to do Dead of Winter because we had a long talk about Dead of Winter and Traitors kind of thing. So I was going to give Traitor another shot. But I let the group decide, and we ended up playing a game that my friend brought that he bought in the 90s, early 90s. This was published by West End Games, Escape from the Death Star.
Okay.
Paperboard and standees for everybody. And the youngest lady of the crowd was kind of like, you know, it was kind of, she liked the paperboard because, you know, they didn't have, you know, not every game had cardboard back around that time. But so, you know, 4-player game, each of you plays one of the stars of episode 4. So I was Chewbacca, and things were pretty peachy until I got followed by 14 stormtroopers. and basically the mechanic is you'll pick up a card where you're at, and it'll either something mildly bad happens or something super bad happens. And I think 2 turns in a row, I picked up 8 stormtroopers. At the beginning of your turn, you roll to see how, if they hit you, and then you have 3 shots to try to, so you can kill 3 stormtroopers. But I was having a terrible time killing stormtroopers, and I hit this card that says get rid of all stormtroopers. So I was all, thank gosh it happened. My next card was you get in a shootout with bounty hunters, and all I had to do was hit them twice. They ended up hitting me 5 times, got me down to 1 stamina. Because in this game, everyone has like their own character sheet. So you have like 5 stats. It's very, you know, RPG-esque, you know, considering it's from West End, who did
game. It was based on WEG Star Wars, because I'm pretty sure they had 5 stats.
Yeah, so I was like, is this going to preview to episode 7 where Chewie was hurt in the last half of the movie? But I ended up making it onto the Falcon with 1 hit point. So, yes. And then we had a little mosquito problem. We looked above. We were just getting ready to start Fuji Flush. We looked on the ceiling, and there was 4 mosquitoes, like as long as my index finger mosquitoes. Because some, you know, I guess their parents left the front door open. So that was fun, you know. I'm sure that's something you have to deal with all the time in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're ginormous, and they're always in the house. And somebody told me those are they're not mosquitoes. There's something that eats mosquitoes. I don't know.
Just one rung up on the food chain.
Yeah, it looks like a mosquito to me, so I'm gonna kill it. He's like, no, don't kill it. I'm like, it ain't paying rent. It doesn't get to live here. Smack.
Yeah, so that was good. And then tomorrow night, we're doing another game night, but I think it's going to be 2-player game night because I only have 1 person coming. So we'll see what happens there. All right, so that's going to end my share time.
One quick second. You reminded me, I went out and played games last Friday, and I did Fuji Flush in the middle. So we played 3 games. Started out with Sheriff of Nottingham, which I finally broke down and bought at Target. I had them do a price match, though, so I picked it up for $22. And everybody enjoyed that. I've been wanting to get that for a while. I played it. I really liked it. I thought it was something I could play with the family, even though this was playing over at game night. And then we did Fuji Flush again. The second time I've played Fuji Flush, and this is the second time I've played it with a full complement of 8 players.
Oh, wow.
and once again, it just comes down to a few people stuck with 1 card going around the table waiting to get rid of that last card. So I really don't think I like it at 8 players.
Yeah, you know, that is just, I think that's just the price of playing Fuji Flush.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, and I don't know, I think of Fuji Flush as, at least from my family, the Uno killer. And
I would rather play Fuji Flush than Uno.
That is
without a doubt true.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking, you know, when you're down to 1 card in Uno.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And it is luck if you're able to play that card. So I don't think that's much different. I know that they're trying to come up with alternate mechanics to kind of alleviate that. But, you know, this is just a super light game.
Right.
You know.
You know, even if you just played the first person down to 1 card instead of being out of cards.
Yeah.
When you play 8 players, first person to 1 card wins. And that would shorten up the game, and it would also get rid of that, I'm just down to 1 card. What am I going to do? I have no real choice. I play my 1 card and I go on. You know, whereas if you have 2 cards, you actually have some choice as to what you're doing. That's probably what I would do. It would shorten up the game, and it would get rid of that last random factor of dropping your last card. And then the other game we played was Quests of Valeria. Quests of Valeria was a follow-up game to Valeria Card Kingdoms, and it is a...
Because I've heard of Villages of Valeria.
It's not Villages, it's Quests. Maybe Quests is the third game in that series.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But it is, it's like Lords of Waterdeep Light.
Mm-hmm.
You have cards, you're using your actions to collect cards, you're using those cards to complete quest cards. And the first cards you get, they're character cards like the alchemist, a soldier, a warlord. They give you different resources. They give you different, they're either a worker, a soldier, or a wizard, or a thief. So they either have a hammer for worker, a helmet for a warrior, some magical symbol, and then two crossed daggers for the thief. And each quest requires, a certain symbols and certain resources. So it's a good game, but we had five new players or four new players or one person who taught, and the game I feel like took like hour and a half, 2 hours, because people were sitting there and literally the AP was killing them. I would take a turn and I would literally take my turn in 30 seconds to a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have people sit there and stare at the board for minutes on end. And it's like, just do something, and the guy who was winning, he stared at the board the longest, but I was like, he killed all of the fun.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, you won. Yes, you beat me by a whole 2 points. I played my game in a quarter of the time that you did. Yes, I could have taken more time and probably played a better game, but that would just increase everybody's misery. So it was pretty sad. I would play it again, but I would want to play either with less players or with all people who've played before.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know what to say. So let's move on over to news.
Sure.
So, you want to go first or you want me to go first?
Sure. I will go first. So this story caught my eye. Director Brett Ratner says that Rotten Tomatoes is going to be the death of the industry, the movie industry.
Click. Go ahead.
Well, it really is a fascinating story. Yeah. And he points to just how universally lambasted Batman v Superman was. But I think Batman v Superman really was not a good movie. When they released the director's cut, it went up a notch in everybody's opinion. They released the wrong cut of that movie. It was not well done. It could have been better. And they showed us that they had a better cut. So he's just talking about how you get all these hundreds of aggregated reviews that can just drag a movie down. Rotten Tomatoes responded with, they feel like it's providing information at people's fingertips. You can find the reviewers you like, giving reviews and giving you information so that you can make good choices. So I don't know. It sounds too much like sour grapes. Somebody who had a movie go bad and you want somebody to blame. Why not blame the people who hated your movie? I don't know, but it was just funny.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you think about that. Now you have a rating system for movies, right? Because before Rotten Tomatoes, what would you really say if you're recommending movies, right? Maybe Siskel and Ebert liked it,
right?
Or Maltin liked it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's easily quantifiable,
right?
And I'm sure they've always had these kind of metrics inside Hollywood, but now the general public has something to go and say, it's a 65%, which means that more critics liked it than didn't like it, but right. By not very much.
Siskel and Ebert, I never found very helpful because they were just entirely too highbrow for me.
Right.
When Roper finally got in there, I found it a lot more interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, you always want to find a reviewer that kind of reflects your taste, first of all.
Yes,
but reviewers tend to get jaded because all they do is watch movies.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you make me think of the Dice Tower. We listen to that podcast, and I am much more apt to check out a game that Tom likes than a game that Eric likes. Eric is just more of a Euro gamer, and Tom is more Ameritrashy, and I am more of an Ameritrash person.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you there. I hear you there. I mean, I don't know. I tend to bop around the you know, that spectrum.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I mean, as far as me getting games, I, you know, I feel like that I do have to have some Ameritrash and some Euro and then some
right middle. I'm sorry, continue.
No, okay. No, the last bit of the article that I saw, it's the writer saying, by the way, when people say that Hollywood is out of touch with middle America, this is what they're talking about. And you
right.
And you can't blame Rotten Tomatoes on that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So I have two, more like one and a half news stories about Iron Fist.
Okay.
So unless you've been stuck in a hole and not checking movie sites or anything like that, or TV sites to be more specific, Iron Fist has not been lighting the world on fire with its critic reviews on the series. But the they said the critics' reaction has not been stellar, even though audience reaction seems to have been kinder. Either way, though, the negative attention has not had seemingly much of an impact on the show's numbers. I guess there's a company called Parrot Analytics, and it's saying that this is the second biggest Marvel series when you look at all four.
Nice.
And so the analytics firm calculates that the series earned, you're going to have to stay with me here, 63.2 million demand expressions in its first 3 days. That's less than 69 million of Luke Cage, but ahead of both Jessica Jones, 51 million, and Daredevil, 23 million. I mean, obviously, there has to be some adjustment because Daredevil was the very first one.
Right.
And they didn't know what to expect.
Yep.
You know, as you know, if you look at the four heroes of the four series, you probably have the least amount of fans was Jessica Jones.
Yep.
And then probably Daredevil, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist, they might pretty close. I'm not exactly sure.
Daredevil got a movie. So I think that's probably why they started with Daredevil.
Right.
And so I think he probably has a little more recognition outside of the hardcore comic fans.
And then my half story about Netflix, and this was so welcome to me. You can skip the intro now on Iron Fist. Did you notice that?
No.
Okay, so I watched it on my computer.
Okay.
And so there's a button for skipping the intro for the credits at the very beginning of each Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it says here, a Reddit user has discovered a new skip intro button, which works with shows that contain regular title sequences, like House of Cards, Stranger Things, Mad Men, and Iron Fist. According to The Verge, the feature has only been spotted on the web and requires Netflix to offer an update in its app if the streaming giant wants to roll out the button to other devices. This follows on from comments earlier this month that the company is getting rid of the 5-star rating system in favor of a thumbs up, thumbs down style deal.
No.
Yeah.
I like the 5-star rating system.
I do too. I don't know what the thumbs up and thumbs down.
It gives me some more granularity.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Art, what you got next?
I wanted to say something there and I completely lost my train of thought. Nope. So next, studios flirt with offering $30 movies for early release. So they're not talking about, you know, we've talked before about day and date releases.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about closing up the release window, making it shorter, and offering movies at a premium. A number of studios are talking about, some more aggressive than others. Universal is currently the most aggressive, talking about maybe doing like a 20-day release window. Disney is on the other opposite end, and they are completely not interested because their movies tend to have very long tails. All the animated stuff, Star Wars, the Marvel, These things, they go into theater, they stay for a long time, they make money continuously. And so there are a number of different pricing structures that are being talked about, anything from $20 all the way up to $50. So they're talking about trying to get people to pay a premium to get a movie in their home sooner. And of course, you know, the big three movie chains are completely against this. But it could be a trend that we see in the future. So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, giving the consumer choices is always a good thing, you know?
Yeah, I would pay a premium to see something much earlier at home.
You know, because I find myself not going to the theater very much anymore.
I like going to the theater, but really for big event movies.
Yeah.
But like, if I could pay $20 to watch The Shack right now at home, I would totally do that.
Yeah.
The
Shack, that was oddly specific.
Because it's up in the theaters right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's 4 weeks in, did we just say earlier? Which would put it at about 28 days. You know, it's still up in the theaters. It's still in the top five movies. But if I could pay $20 even for just a rental, because I don't like to rent movies. I'd much rather just buy a movie outright.
Yeah.
You know, and then just have it. And if I can, just pay $3 or $4 extra dollars and also get the digital copy as well, I'll do that as well. You know, but like I said, I would pay a premium to watch things sooner, but we'll see if this goes anywhere.
All right. Well, we talked about Ryan Reynolds being in Life, this weekend. We have some more speculation about Deadpool 2. If you remember last time, we talked about Stranger Things actor David Harbour being the front runner.
For Cable.
To play Cable in Deadpool 2. Now we have another front runner.
Okay.
So David Harbour has now been pushed back, and the new front runner is General Zod himself, Michael Shannon.
Interesting.
We'll have to see. Keep our fingers crossed. We did find out who's playing Domino. A young actress by the name of Zazie Beetz, who apparently is on the show Atlanta, which can be found on FX, even though I think their season ended.
Okay.
So we know we're gonna have Domino. We know we're gonna have Cable, but we don't know who's gonna be playing Cable. Apparently they have plenty time to figure this out, because they're going to start shooting this summer in Vancouver.
All right.
Art, what do you have next?
Okay, next. So recently, Star Wars Shock Episode 9 is not the end. Disney boss confirms plans possibly stretching out for 15 years.
Oh, yeah. I'm not shocked by that. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not shocked that they're continuing it, but that they're already laying the groundwork for 15 years of stories. That's interesting. So here's the article is very short. Disney CEO Bob Iger has revealed that there could, in fact, be as much as 15 years worth of story in the back pocket. Speaking during a Q&A at USC, he said via Digital Spy, "We're starting to talk about what could happen after Episode 9. We've got a creative team actually thinking about what could be another decade and a half of Star Wars stories." So I think that could be interesting. I am a long way from burnout. I mean, we are heavily into comic book movies right now, and I could not be happier. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look and see when I pegged the beginning of the comic book renaissance, but it feels like it's been a good 15 years at this point, maybe a little more. So if you told me I was going to get 15 years of Star Wars movies, I don't see myself wearing thin on that anytime soon, unless they got like really, really bad.
Well, obviously there's plenty of novels to go off.
Yeah.
Even though they're apparently not canon.
Right.
But they could do like they did with Star Wars Rebels and just pull in what they want to do,
I think that was always the plan, to wipe the slate clean and pick and choose only what they wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any qualms about the quality of Star Wars after Rogue One and Rebels.
Right.
They need to stop doing this prequel stuff. and actually move past whatever's going to happen in episode 9.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, right now, currently, they're pushing out one a year. So, you know, these, you know, obviously, you know, Rogue One did a great job. We're going to have Han Solo coming soon. But these side stories, I don't know. Maybe we worry about those a little more because they're not going to build on each other, at least, what you know, so far, even though Han Solo is a prequel. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But it's going to be all Star Wars all the time, seems like.
I'm down with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll, no, I, you know, I will, I'll be there. I know that if I have to, you know, wheel my old ass in the wheelchair to the front row, that's fine. By that time, it'll probably just go, you know, they'll probably just broadcast right into my brain.
Yeah, right.
So anyways, I think that's going to be it for my news. Is there anything else that you want to?
One more thing. So here's why Amy Schumer is dropping out of the Barbie live action movie. So I remember this hitting and there being some controversy, people being upset, blah, 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 people trying to fat shame Amy Schumer, yada, yada, yada. But it really, it's just coming down to scheduling conflicts. So she is out and they are going to be looking for somebody new for the Barbie movie. So we'll see where that goes. You know, Amy Schumer has her fans, she has her detractors, but at least that's what's up. So caught my eye because Aubrey loves Barbie. And depending on the rating, we may or may not have seen it. Well, we'll still, you know, that going forward won't change whether or not Amy Schumer is in it.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. When is it going to stop, man? It seems like this, let's just throw a dart at something in a toy store. Oh yeah, let's make a movie about that.
It's all about product placement and building a brand. And
no, I know.
It's corporate making money.
I mean, it's kind of like, and not to bring up Dice Tower again, but, you know, what movie do you want to see made based on a board game? And they said, none. Look what they did, the battle, or Battleship.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say. All right, so I think that's going to end news, and it's also going to end the show. So I just want to say on the behalf of Art and myself, thank you for listening. We appreciate the people that listen to the show. Our website is backseatproducers.com. You can go there, find old episodes of this show and our other show, Backseat Producers, with Tony and Adam, Alex and Kayla. What was the last movie they did? Do you remember?
Arrival.
Okay, Arrival. So if you want to listen to them talk about all things related to Arrival, please go check out that other show. And thank you for Tony for giving us a place to host this show and allowing us to continue. Other than that, again, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time. Art, say goodbye.
Goodbye.